Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, March 8th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Are you JT Lancer?
No, I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Well, can I have your autograph, whoever you are?
Yeah, I'm sure that could be arranged, but right now, Sonny, step aside. Today, we continue the Erotic Mind podcast series. Only instead of a literary artist like the last couple weeks, we have an immensely talented visual artist joining us. I have the pleasure of introducing you to Rob Clark. As you know, for nearly 2 years now, I've been chatting with noted erotic artists, both literary and visual, from all over the freaking world. I started this podcast series as a means to uncovering something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. And I'm thrilled that many common threads are beginning to appear in these conversations. For example, Rob approaches his work in much the same way as many of his illustrator peers that we have met in this series, but his perspective and the fruits of his erotic mind are uniquely his own.
I know this is hard for you, but it's all beautiful.
It is nice, isn't it? Listen, don't miss the wonderful slideshow Rob has prepared of some of his work. It accompanies this podcast posting on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. And be sure to look for Rob and all of his delicious artwork, especially his newest creation, Dog Boy Scoot, on his site, robclark.net. And that's Clark with an E.
Karen and I are staying here tonight. We have a flight back to Detroit in the morning. Are you staying?
Yeah, I'm staying because guess what? I live here. This week's podcast sponsor is once again Eden Fantasies, the one-stop place to shop for all the very best in adult products. You'll find a full line of top-quality toys, fetish kits, and sexy lingerie at Eden Fantasies, but that's not what makes our sponsor so damn special. What makes them so extraordinary is their social conscience, and that, my friends, makes all the difference in the world to a sex-positive guy like me. The Eden Fantasies site is so chock-full of tips for the conscientious consumer, practical user guides, and toy reviews. They even have a wonderful community blog called EdenCafe.com. Be sure to check out Eden Cafe. It's so fun and sexy, irreverent, and downright naughty, but it's also exceptionally informative. Look for the Eden Fantasies banner right there in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, and you can link through to Eden Cafe from there. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Rob, and thank you for joining us. I am so thrilled that we could make this time to be together. I love your brilliant artwork, and I'm so happy that you're here to share your erotic mind with us. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello. Hello, nice people. It's nice to have a chance to talk about my stuff.
Oh, good, good, good. Do you get to chat about your stuff in a public forum very often?
Maybe once or twice a year I do. So that's it's really helpful for me. I like doing that.
Yeah.
So
and it's like helpful for us too, because we get to see a wide range of erotic art, both written and visual, and it's we've learned a great deal, myself included, and I'm thinking this is a wonderful thing to do together. So I confess, I've been spending way too much time on your site, robclark.net, and as you know, I'm also a relatively new member of your Yahoo group, so I believe that I am single-handedly burning up all of your bandwidth. It's just that there is so much eye candy, and your creations are so much fun. You clearly love your work. You do, don't you?
Yeah, I do. You know, I kind of think of it as like my big hairy baby, you know, my big ugly baby. So that's sort of how I think about my work.
I see. I'm particularly fond of one of your newest creations, Dog Boy Scoot. You write about this, saying, "For the past year, I've been pouring all of my evil juju into developing my Dog Boy Scoot. During this period, I've gotten several emails politely inquiring as to why I'm spending so much time on this one character. My response is to say that Scoot is a symbol to me, an embodiment of the animalistic qualities in men that terrified me as a kid, obsessed me as an adult, and I'm afraid of losing as I grow older. I conclude by saying that my goal is to end up with a series of images that are a monument to my fucked up vision of the male animal. Let's talk about that. Tell us
okay.
more about the animalistic qualities in men that terrified you as a kid.
Well, I have this ability to go back and sort of remember like what it was like to be like a little kid, you know, like when you're like 5 years old and you just sort of like, I just remember, you know, being a little gay boy and just kind of remembering, you know, what how strange men seemed, you know, all the things that men do, all boys do, you know, like playing sports and like horseplay and roughhousing and, you know, I don't think I'm alone in this.
No, not at all.
No, it's just sort of like feeling a certain amount of alienation or from you know, the, you know, specific gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're compelling as well as off-putting, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's almost like things that repulsed you and terrified you as a kid start to turn you on. You know, it's like this boomerang effect,
and
you know, you just things that kind of terrified you as a kid start to, when you're a teenager, start to become fascinating.
Right. I agree. And far from being a fucked up vision of the male animal, I would say that your dog boy Scoot brings out the playful side of manliness. Wouldn't you agree? Is that your intention?
Yeah. Well, I think I like I've sort of have this kind of natural, on one hand, my own kind of like fantasies and images I kind of like fantasize about can be kind of dark and.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of they're all about power and that. But when I actually do my images and my art and that, I kind of like to have the quality of goofiness to
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like trying to almost make fun of my own kind of darker impulses and sort of like kind of, I don't know, kind of mitigate them a little bit.
Right. Well, I think you're doing a brilliant job. I think Dog Boy Scoot is absolutely wonderful. I mean, it does, as you suggest, capture, you know, this this almost unhandleable maleness, and there's an awkwardness to it, but it is so compelling and it's so sweet and so charming. I think it's great. I love it.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think that's sort of actually, when people tell me that it's sweet, that makes me really happy, because it's sort of like I have like sadistic impulses, you know, like about fantasies about power and men losing power, but then I also kind of want to mix sweetness with it too, which is, I think, kind of a, I don't know how viable that is, but.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dog Boy is not, it's all male. I mean, there's nothing sissy about Dog Boy at all. In fact, it's, you know, hyper-masculinity from my point of view, but there is this sweetness to it. Maybe because it's, you know, I'm a dog kind of guy. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think you know, there's just something kind of stupid and loyal and loving and masculine about the dog, you know. I think there's just certain qualities, you know, that are kind of like you say are masculine, and I think a dog would embody it, and, you know, whereas a cat might, some people might would think would be more feminine, you know.
Right. So. I agree. I totally agree. So listen, before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about something really interesting. Let's talk about you.
Oh, good.
Would you be up for sharing something of your personal life? You do afford yourself a personal life, right? I wouldn't want our audience to think that your life as a super erotic athlete is all work and no play.
Yeah, well, I think that's whenever people meet me in the flesh, they're invariably disappointed. So that's that's been pretty consistent. So, but I mean, I live in Queens, New York.
Uh-huh.
I'm like 45 years old. I have a partner. We've been together for a really long time,
uh-huh.
Like 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So,
did you grow up in New York?
No, actually, I grew up in Edmonton, Canada.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I went to art school in Canada, and I came to the U.S. to go to grad school in at Rutgers University in like 1989.
Uh-huh.
And I've stuck around.
I love it. How did you get your start as an artist? You went to art school, you said, but I mean, did you draw as a kid?
Yeah, I always, you know, I think as a teenager, I drew in that, and that's sort of like, I think, how you form your identity, you know, you kind of get some encouragement to do something, and you keep refining it and putting more energy into it, so.
That seems to be one of the universals in this series, that the people who have been, who are successful writers or graphic artists or visual artists now, started out very young, you know, drawing or writing, and over the years they've just grew into this thing that they had as a gift.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I really believe in, like, natural talent so much, but I think it's like you invest time in learning something,
right.
And that becomes your medium, and it just mm-hmm. I think, you know, I've known a lot of talented people, artists that I've given up, and
mm-hmm.
I've known like people with, you know, through determination and you know have honed their talent. So
well, there's nothing, there's not a whole lot in the popular culture that, you know, encourages people to develop their artistic abilities. I mean, it's, you know, go to school, get a job, go to work. Have a family, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's little to no room for people to exercise a passion that, you know, might go beyond, you know, the day-to-day.
Yeah, well, I mean, my own background, my parents never told me to do anything. They always seemed to have let me just do my thing. I think if I had a kid in some bizarro world, I'd tell them to go to law school.
But... Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing that you're not breeding then, huh?
Probably. for a number of reasons.
So, you went to art school, and you've been doing art for a long time. Were the erotic components to your work there from the beginning, or did you grow into that as well?
Well, you know, I think actually I was thinking about this, and I sort of realized, like, kind of around 1986, that was like the last year that I was in my undergrad school. That's when this all started,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of like. I was the work I was doing for classes at the time aside from that, I started keeping like a sketchbook,
uh-huh.
and it was just sort of like I started doing this kind of stream of consciousness drawings, kind of about my sex fantasies and and that it was like something I tried as a teenager, you
uh-huh.
know, and I thought, well, why don't I try doing this again? And I was sort of like. Just the one parameter was like, just let it get it out of your head and don't censor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did this, and I wasn't having very good like critiques in my classes, or my own work wasn't going very well. And I started showing some of the professors this book I had, and I think they were actually said they were pretty sure that this was a lot more interesting than what I was doing in my classes.
They were clever, huh?
Well, yeah. Well, I think it was just, you know, it was just something different.
Right.
So I don't think they knew where it was going to lead, mm-hmm. but
they didn't accuse you of being a big fat pervert or anything like that, did they?
No, I think they were just probably bored with every, you know, when you've got like 100.
Oh God, I guess.
Yeah. So I think it was just basically this was something new. So. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it's also by that time in art school, you sort of like gravitate towards the professors that you kind of have an affinity with.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah. So I've been having this running discussion with several of the other artists that I've been interviewing lately, and it concerns the distinction between artist and illustrator. And I'd love for you to weigh in on this, if you will. Are you an artist? or an illustrator, or are you both? And is there a line, actually, that you can demark one from the other?
When I was in art school, I was like study painting and fine art, and I think just when I got out of it, I just started using more and more like the tools of illustration.
Uh-huh.
And I've always drawn representationally, like, so I'm using, but it just is after I started, my work matured, I kind of, my work started looking like illustration.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the main difference is when I work as an illustrator, for a couple of years, I worked for a porn magazine, or I did some work for a porn magazine, and the main difference was, for my own work, I have 100% control.
Right.
I do what I want, and for illustration, it's somebody else tells you what to do.
Right.
And I think that's probably, for me, the main distinction.
I see.
So,
is an illustrator the poor stepchild of the artist, or are they co-equal, or you know, I mean, I know some artists really do make a hierarchy out of the whole thing. An artist, fine artist, is at the top, and illustrator is somewhere below that.
Well, you know, I can only talk about my own work,
right,
I think,
because
I look, when I look at the things that I did for that the porn magazine, I think it's kind of they're not so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think my own work was stronger.
Right.
So I kind of gave up on thinking that I was going to make it as that would be a way to get an audience, was through kind of illustrating for kind of gay magazines.
Right, I got it.
Oh, but when an illustration, there's so much that has inspired me by books and illustrations and magazine. Mm-hmm. I don't want to denigrate it.
Right.
In fact, I'm just talking from my own experience. It wasn't a very fulfilling career like path.
Mm-hmm. Right. So where do you find your models, or are all of these exceptional creatures figments of your imagination? And if they are, I think you need to see a doctor, like Dr. Dick, because that's what they call having sex on the brain.
Well, I mean, I've been doing this for so long, I think I've got like the basics of human anatomy, but I do have some guys with bodies that I can call that will model for me, but I always feel a certain amount of pressure to do things and do flattering things when I use their images.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like almost using images from my image library.
Right.
And my own imagination.
Yeah.
to do things. I have it gives me a certain detachment.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody models for me, they're usually so nice and so sweet, and they want something to look, they want to look good.
Exactly. Gosh.
Yeah. But I mean, there's just so many images out there nowadays, you know, with the like on the internet. It's, I remember, like, you know, 15 years ago, I do crazy things, like I just like buy magazines and cut out pictures, and
mm-hmm.
I subscribed to every like video porn catalog there was. And
well, you got to get your inspiration wherever it comes, and it didn't used to be so available or so prolific, you know, as it is nowadays on the internet. I mean, one can hardly, you know, open a browser without it, you know, tumbling
out.
Yeah,
I know. I just remember like how my first time I bought a porn magazine, how difficult it was.
Yeah, and you know, the wonderful thing about erotic art, and this is, you know, I've made this comment before, is that a lot of the stuff, I mean, the really graphic photography that, you know, passes for pornography on the internet, it gets so the same. It's cookie cutter, and, you know, I find it, you know, soul robbing, actually. But in the hands of an erotic artist, you know, that is changed altogether. It's imbued with a life force that you know, the photography doesn't have, even if it's really good photography.
Well, I mean, I'm always thinking like why I'm doing this, the difference between a photograph and a drawn representation of mm-hmm. someone, and what can a drawing do that a photo can't do, you know? And there's like things like caricature and
mm-hmm.
stylization.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You can focus in on a face and try and magnify whatever the essence is that person embodies.
Yeah, it's curious because I know a lot of porn stars because of my porn company, Daddy O Productions, and a lot of the really big stars have animated or at least illustrated avatars, and instead of using their real body or their real face or face and body, they have these illustrations that I think that are so much more charming than a lot of the photography that captures them so well.
I think in some ways there is a difference between it. I don't know if you're really horny. I don't think a drawing has the kind of is effective to scratch the itch, as like a video or.
Right.
It's something else. It affects some other part of the brain. There's like kind of like this kind of weird part of like your higher brain functions. It's and your kind of the reptilian primitive part kind of connect.
Right.
When you're looking at a piece of erotica.
I am particularly charmed by your animated GIFs. They are so adorable, and so that's got to be fun to create, right?
I'm sort of like GIF animation is like the most inanimate kind of animation. it's sort of like the most bare bones kind of the least amount of movement that you can call something. Animated, so but it's pretty far from Pixar, but it
I love it. The way you animate them make them charming. If you animated them in a different way, they would be menacing or they would be off-putting even, but you do, they're just so cute and charming. I love it.
Well, that's I think where I'm kind of heading towards too, is I've just becoming, in the past year I've started developing this kind of reoccurring character, and it just seems to make sense that I try animating and thinking of a narrative story. Right. Or this is just it's very alien from what my background is, where I was for so many years was thinking about making like art objects that you'd hang on a wall, to start thinking about things in terms of like a story and I'm thinking other media things that are being. I seem to have picked up some sort of energy with this comic book thing.
Right.
So somebody's actually asked me to be in a comic book show, which I find really strange because I've never done a comic.
Well, that's where I want to go next, because I think you are on the verge. I mean, it's clear that everything is pointing, at least to my mind, is pointing in that direction. So are you seeing any trends in terms of erotic comics? Are they growing in popularity that you know of?
I think there. It seems to. It's actually not something I'm really all that familiar with. I almost feel like if I knew much about it, it might scare me. It might be kind of daunting. So, I mean, when I look in a bookstore or something, I see so many like people younger than me have been affected by like Japanese anime and that, and that's just like a whole huge like medium.
Yes. Right, and it is. It's a genre all to itself, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's almost like I almost feel like it would require taking a course or something to really understand it all or the history of it.
Right. So some of my previous guests have spoken of their connection with a community of other erotic comic makers. Are you also a member of such a community?
Well, let's see. I think the only kind of time I really there's in New York and LA there's been like the Tom of Finland erotic art fairs.
Uh-huh.
And I try and do them whenever I get a chance. Uh-huh. So that's, I mean, there's a kind of an online community too, which is that's different. But when a community of meeting flesh and blood people, it's kind of found the Tom of Finland venues to be really fun.
Right.
Really, I met a lot of cool people through that.
Yeah, I mean that's how I found out about several of the artists that I've interviewed so far: Sean Z and Steve McIsaac, and my friend Axel, who is yet to join me for a podcast, but hopefully soon.
Oh, yeah, I've met them all through there.
Yes, they're wonderful, and you know they're apparently banding together, you know, to support one another, not just, you know, in terms of encouraging work, but also, you know, in publications and all that kind of stuff, which is a daunting task, it would seem to me.
Yeah, well, I think that's another reason that the comic book thing kind of appeals to me, because I think there is like a community of people that are like, you know, coming together to, they kind of help one another,
yeah,
to publish, put together anthologies of books.
Yes. And it turns a relatively solitary work situation into a collaborative effort, at least in terms of distribution, it would seem.
Yeah, well, I think that's always kind of like the thing that's kind of, being a visual artist, it's very isolating,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I think that... That's sort of like one of the reasons when people give up being an artist. I think it's because they don't like the isolation.
Right. So let's turn our attention to erotic art in general. I am of the mind that defining erotic art is difficult, since perceptions of both what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and by culture. Is this your perception as well? And if it is, could you elaborate a bit?
Yeah, I agree. I think yesterday actually I went to a Japanese restaurant and they, you know, not every Japanese restaurant I've ever been into, they always have these, I think they're called Takumi statues.
Right.
They're like these kind of little raccoon characters.
Yes.
They're kind of comical and,
mm-hmm,
you know, they're these kind of adorable characters, and it looks like they're sitting like on a pair of rocks, but, you know, and actually they're sitting on a pair of really large testicles. So I googled that and found out what exactly that meant, if it was meant to be erotic, but it was like actually that character is meant to be the sitting on its testicles is apparently, according to Google, like a signifier of financial good luck.
Ah, good. Dear.
So
yes.
So
a kind of fertility.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I agree that over time, what things are considered erotic change.
Right. So, as we've discovered in this series, there are several plausible definitions floating around out there about what erotic art is. But I'd like to get your specific take on it. What does erotic in art mean to you?
Well, I think, it's linked to your sexuality and what, mm-hmm, kind of like turns you on. I think for me, the difference between erotica and pornography, like pornography, I think, is about efficiency.
You know, that's a really good word to describe it. Interesting.
Well, I think you've got an itch and you want it scratched, you know, and that's what pornography does. And I think erotica has other things, other elements. This can be a spectrum of other elements, but it can, on one hand, it can sort of interfere, or it makes getting to the point harder than with pornography.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it can make it more kind of like lasting, or have other bring another dimension to it.
Well, it's more of an investment on the part of the consumer, it would seem to me, erotica and erotic art, as opposed to pornography, because pornography is just, you know, you consume it and, you know, it kind of washes over you. In erotica and erotic art, one actually has to think about it some. It has, you know, you're having to process something, because it's not a moving picture. It's not, you know, a photographic image necessarily. And so, you know, there's an investment, it seems to me, to flesh it out, to open it up perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. If I start talking about movies, which I'm not really qualified to, you know, like I think often in the '70s, like the late '70s, before there was videotapes, there seemed to be a move towards in pornography to have like plots and
yes,
you know, make bring up the production qualities of pornography. So,
yeah.
I guess the intention for my work was always kind of like where I thought it would end up. Was I always thought that I liked the idea of it being hanging on, making something that would hang on somebody's wall,
mm-hmm.
like in the boudoir,
mm-hmm.
kind of like I thought that's. I didn't really. Everything I've ever done is kind of. I always thought was meant to be kind of small and kind of something that you keep in your bedroom or in some part that maybe you don't want. You know, it's not like
right.
in your living room right. or something.
Well, that's a whole movement in art. You know, the boudoir. The paintings for the boudoir, you know, it's not the kind of stuff you put in the family room or, you know, in the common room or the great room or all that kind of stuff. It's something intimate, and it is to suggest the erotic or sensual elements of life. Yes?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it can have, like, kind of like for my own work, I kind of divide into two kind of. There's a division. Up until recently, I was always concerned about making things for the, you know, like an art object that somebody would want to buy and hang
right.
on their wall
uh-huh.
and that. And I've just never made that work somehow. I've just never been able to. I feel like I've gotten more momentum with doing things that are kind of. Reproduced mechanically, like printed.
Right.
Or distributed on the web, or this, you know, I feel like I've reached a bigger audience, and I feel a certain amount of more energy with that than the other route, which is making an object and finding a gallery or somebody that would distribute it
right.
and find,
right, right,
you know.
Right.
So it wasn't successful monetarily, and it just wasn't successful, like, connecting with other people.
Hmm. And with that, sir, I must alert us and our audience that our time is up for today. But I have so many more questions, and I would like you to come back next week, if that's at all possible.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, good. Because this is such an interesting thing, and you have such a great take on all of this. And I might add a somewhat more mature perspective than a lot of the other people that have been part of this series. I like it very much. Thank you. But before we conclude, could you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
My website's www.robclark.net, and Clark has an E on the end. I've had a website for 10 years now, and it's kind of a maze. After all this time it's really important to update it. So I'm going to try and make it, if you come back every 2 weeks, there'll be something new.
And
so
and we also can link through to your Yahoo group, right?
That's right, yeah.
Good.
That's just a way I've found actually really kind of useful of just communicating with an audience.
Right. Good.
Like doing something.
Can we buy your work on your site?
I'm really such a horror, appalling salesman. If somebody sees something they like, they're more than I'm happy to. I'll do my best to try and see if it's available. But I really that would be like when I get my assistance and that to
here, amanuensis.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Alrighty. Well, thank you. So, and until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Richard.
Bye, Rob. Fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for part two of my conversation with Rob Clark and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Remember, this week's podcast sponsor is Eden Fantasies. EdenFantasies.com provides you a unique opportunity to shop and educate yourself about the amazing array of adult products out there. Of course, they uphold a high standard of quality in the toys they carry, but they are even more focused on customer service and consumer education, which makes Eden Fantasies, to my mind, the very best place to shop on the net. I also want to turn your attention to Eden Fantasy's brilliant new e-magazine called Sex Is. You'll find tantalizing articles and informed opinions on sex, society, health, erotica, and humor. You'll even find ways to green your sex life. And just in case you don't get a big enough dose of Dr. Dick here on DrDickSexAdvice.com, you'll find that I have an occasional column at Sex Is, too. It's called Dr. Dick on Demand.
Oh, we're telling the truth.
You betcha. Look for the Sex Is banner in the sidebar of my site. One final thing, I want to take a moment to invite you to check out my product review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans, now you can see what's hot and what's not in adult products. You'll find reviews of all sorts of adult goodies, sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, fetish gear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Again, the address is DrDickSexToyReviews.com. And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously. Once there, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. I wouldn't want you to miss even one episode. And while you're there, feel free to leave a comment. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.